This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This program contains themes of an adult nature. Word for Word is an in-depth look into the lives of real people, which means this episode may contain explicit accounts of real-life events, including alcohol and drug use. The language used at times may cause some offence, but has been left uncensored due to the accuracy of the story. No offence is intended, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community stations around the nation, this is Word for Word. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Welcome, family and friends, fans and fiends, to today's edition of Word for Word. I want to thank you for tuning in today. I am Benjamin Norris, and it's simply a delight to continue to work on this show for the Joy Network, which has already featured some of the community's strongest voices. In the tradition of this ongoing program, I continue to look at powerful stories and insights into the life and lifestyle of some incredible people. Each week, we will chat with those in and around the community who have inspired us, entertained us, but mostly they've made an impact on the queer community of Australia. This man was born in Melbourne, and while you would know him as a household name, he originally found his feet as a musician on the pub scene playing in cover bands. This man was then seen on the first season of Australian Idol, followed by Dancing with the Stars and Celebrity Apprentice, and is certainly not afraid of morning chat shows. You would also know him for appearing on countless networks and hosting everything from the revamped Young Talent Time to promoting charities including Are You OK? Over the years, he affectionately was nicknamed an Aussie larrikin by the media, which included some media attention after hooking up with Paris Hilton. Over the last 10 years, he has redirected his career and proved that he is way more than a reality TV star and has been seen in musicals right across the country. Starring in stage musicals like Grease, Legally Blonde, Wicked, this guy has treaded the boards with a strong ambition to one day be seen on the West End. I'd like to welcome you, and I'd like to welcome Rob Mills to Word for Word.
Grew up in the sheltered southeastern suburbs of Melbourne.
One minute you're anonymous and the next minute you're not. That is a huge adjustment.
My parents split up when I was 12, so year 7.
The career of Rob Millsy Mills has taken some pretty random twists and turns over the years.
I was always imitating, you know, crowd from the bed of me.
I'm not a bad dancer, but I work really hard.
I'll never say that I'm straight.
Joining us now is one man who never gives any less than 110%. Please welcome YTT host Rob Mills.
Today on Scoop Club, Benjamin Norris catches up with Rob Mills.
The reviews I was getting on the street when people meet me, they're like, you're actually not a bad bloke. Yeah.
The 2013 season of Celebrity Apprentice is just around the corner.
You are officially single for all the ladies out there, is that true?
I am a single man, yeah.
Even to be different is to be okay with being different, and that you can still defy gravity by just choosing to be who you are.
Thanks for having me.
You can see my place from your window, which is hilarious.
Really?
I live just right up the street.
Dangerous having a conversation with you about where you live on radio so people can then find you?
No, it's fine. But I have been wary of, like, I walk around nude a lot. So I'm You could see it. You could definitely see it with a pair of binoculars.
So Joy listeners need to know that if you're ever coming into the studio, you can see Rob Mills nude across the road.
Yeah.
Just getting people excited.
Well, just to show you just that, how close I am to Joy, you know, geographically and also close to my heart.
Do people call you Millsy anymore, or are you mainly just Rob Mills now?
I still get Millsy. That's a nickname. It's an Australian thing. You're never going to lose that. I don't think Barnsey's ever going to lose Barnsey. Farnsey will never lose Farnsey.
Yeah, that's
true. By the way, I put myself in the same category as John Farnham and Jimmy Barnes.
Now, you are a Melbourne boy.
Mm.
So you grew up around here?
Yeah, I grew up here. I grew up in Glen Waverley, not in the city. And in fact, didn't really know a lot about the city at all. But yeah, I grew up in the sheltered southeastern suburbs of Melbourne.
In the burbs?
Yeah, in the burbs, mate. Youngest of three.
Yeah, well, how many siblings? So three?
Yeah, two older brothers.
And did they keep you in line?
Yeah, and still do. Yeah.
Okay.
My eldest brother is very good at that.
They ground you.
Yeah, absolutely. He when I told him I was doing Tom Gleason's Hard Chat, he said, this is the greatest day of the year. He goes, not of my life. He goes, I've had children. But of the year so far, you doing Tom Gleason's Hard Chat is... He goes, I don't really have to do anything after this.
It's done. I'm expecting that they're writing to Tom Gleason, giving them some tips on what they can roast you on.
Oh, there's nothing I haven't already heard from my brother, so I was fine. Really, honestly, I was fine.
What about your parents? Did you have a good relationship with them?
Yeah, growing up, yeah, really, really good. My parents split up when I was 12, so year 7, as most parents probably do around that time during the 90s.
So true. My parents are divorced.
Yeah, I remember going, oh, my parents are still together. That's weird. Oh, no, there that goes. It didn't take long. Yeah, and then my stepdad and then my dad found a new partner as well. So, yeah, I had like 4 parents growing up, which was really good and challenging. And I think one of the best things about that is you learn more, I suppose. I learned more about different personalities and what they brought out in each other. So that I think the new partners brought out a better side in both my parents.
That's, I think, a beautiful thing to say because, you know, for a lot of parents that get divorced, you know, they're very unhappy in that relationship. And it just goes to show that it doesn't have to be like that, that you probably can go off and have different relationships and look for a better life.
Sometimes during.
Maybe that happened. I don't want to get you into any more trouble than you've already been in your life. Sort of, did you have a role that you played in your family? Was there a dynamic that you had?
Clown, I suppose. Yeah, I would be entertainment. And now, I suppose, moral compass. I try and be, I don't want to say psychologist. I'm not qualified to be one of them, but counsellor. Yeah.
I think you've lived kind of a lot of lives, you know, and you've had to grow up very quickly from doing like a reality TV show in your early 20s.
Mm.
So I think it does give you some life experience on sitting back and listening to what people's problems are and offering them some advice.
Yeah, I meet a lot of people. I'm surrounded by, like, every couple of months you're in a brand new show or a new musical that's touring around, or just the people that you meet in my day-to-day. There's a lot of contact hours with a lot of new people every year. So, not saying I'm an expert at all, but yeah, I definitely like to play counsellor or moral compass in my family.
What school did you go to in Glen Waverley?
I went to Brentwood Secondary College, which is a very successful state school. My cousin now teaches there. It was just like, I suppose, any other state school, public school, no frills, just what we did was play sport in at lunchtime and recess. I would kick the footy and play cricket, and that was it.
I can imagine you were kind of like the cool kid at school.
No, I don't think so. I was just the kid who got along well with everyone.
Right.
I never really felt like, I definitely had close friends. I think we were the cool group, but I never felt like I was cool at any stretch, not at all. And I have great friends who were not the cool kids. Yeah, the smart ones, I like them as well.
Well, I think that's probably why you've been so successful in your career is because you're quite adaptable and I think you come across as being very curious and wanting to meet people, wanting to hear their story. And I think what people don't know about you, because I've also seen you often around at different things, is that you can be quite shy.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I am at my most comfortable when I'm not the center of attention. Yeah, chameleon, maybe a little bit. But not in a personality trying to fit in kind of way, but just trying to make everyone feel comfortable. So if there isn't an alpha, I'll fit the role of the alpha. If there's, that's just how I've always been. I think maybe it's, I don't want to say it's star signs because I'm not quite sure if I believe in that stuff, but I'm a Gemini, Cancer, right on the cusp kind of person. So maybe there's a couple of different personalities maybe. I don't know.
When was it then that you worked out that you were into performance art, like singing, acting? What age were you?
From a young age, I was always singing around the house with my brothers. There's always music on in my household. Mum, Dad, both massive lovers of music. Mum was a karaoke queen. She still goes to this day. Loves it. I've been out and watched her a few times. She's still got it. Loves singing those Carpenter songs. They're heartbreaking, Mum. Try something a bit more upbeat. And Dad, just, yeah, lover of music. So we were always singing around the house. My older brother's got a really good voice. My middle brother loves music, not a great singer, but loves it. Like, we will go to concerts all the time together.
How do you know he's a bad singer? Because you're standing too close to him at the concerts.
But I let him go. Like,
his name?
Matt loves
Shout
it.
Shout out to you, Matt.
Shout out to Matt. But he loves it. You can't poo-poo anyone who's, you know, really loving what they're doing, especially when they're your brother. And I think it was year 9 at high school, my music teacher had asked me to sing at the school concert at the end of the year. And I chose a song that was Ridiculous. Now I think about it. I talked about this in my cabaret show a few years ago. For anyone who came to saw the show, you would have seen the footage as well.
Oh, wow.
I sang a song about an African-American guy pleading to his girlfriend's parents, who were white. He was in love with this girl, and to treat him as a real person, not just a black man. So that's the song I chose. I Believe by the Blessed Union of Souls. Not knowing the...
Any of the meaning
at all. And looking back, I go, you know what? I've always just been colorblind, and I just see the person. Love is love, guys. Love is love. That's how I've always seen it. Subconsciously, I saw it, obviously.
Do people respond, though, to your singing, though? They must have been like, oh, you're a good singer. And is that what sort of gave you the bug?
Yeah, I feel like we always lean towards something that we're good at. If someone gives you praise, it happens when you're a child. You do something funny. Your parents start laughing, or the people around you start laughing. So you're like, oh. Yeah, we learn that at a very young age, I think.
I can imagine, though, that you would have been in at least one stage production at school, though.
No, we didn't have any. We had no drama or end-of-year productions at all. So, I think if there was one, yeah, I definitely would have been the lead.
Do you want to go back in time and be in a high school production?
No, I'm happy not to be.
Okay.
But when I meet other people through musical theatre, they're like, what do you mean you never did any of this stuff? I didn't. I've been really, I don't know, I missed out on that learning from a young age. But I was always singing, and I was singing in bands and stuff. So that was my sort of foray into performance.
Can you tell me about Mega Man?
Oh, the band, the Mega Man. Yeah, we were just a little acoustic band. What started as a full-blown rock band, singing at cricket clubs, footy clubs, would smash it out of the hits. You know, the Cold Chisels, the Foo Fighters, the Pearl Jams. Oh, my voice. I was always imitating, can't find a better man. It was always a bit of that, trying to push that vocal bar right to the back.
I watched you on YouTube today, obviously knowing that I'm seeing you today. I obviously obsessed with you.
Did a stalk, thanks,
mate. Did a stalk, yeah. And I saw you singing a Robbie Williams song, and you were British in some of that song. So I think that's the chameleon coming out.
That was the imitator.
But you had quite a big following, because I actually, this is going to make me seem even more stalkerish, so it just doesn't go back as far as just today.
Sure.
I saw you perform at the Red Eagle.
Oh, yeah, on a Sunday afternoon.
On a Sunday afternoon.
So we started singing there. I was probably 18. I just finished high school. And the band had been playing for maybe 6 months or so. And then we got this gig at the Red Eagle on a Sunday. And there was three people there. One of them was my mum. One of them was my brother, and probably just a bar fly. And the bar staff. So six people. And we built that place up from those six people to lines out the door.
Do they still owe you some money?
No, you know what was great? Every Sunday when the Idol was on, so I obviously had to stop singing there on a Sunday, but the band kept playing. They got another singer in. They'd have the Idol on the big screen, and they would stop all the music and whatever was happening, and everyone would watch my performance. And then my mate, the guitarist, and the owner of the pub would get on the microphone and go, all right, now's the time to vote. So they would all vote every week for me at this one pub.
That's why I did so well.
That's pretty much the only reason I got through. So thanks, Doug, and thanks to the Mega Men.
To anyone who was down in Albert Park.
Yeah. Which is now a wine bar, and they ruined it. I really think they ruined that place. It was just such a great pub. No pokies, just a couple of pool tables. The footy was always playing, and live music, and yeah.
We're going to sound so old right now when we both talk about all those cool pubs that are now gone.
I know.
Like, oh, for the gay men, like the Greyhound.
The Greyhound was great.
Great.
And they just did it up, and then they tore it down.
They tore it down. It was a sad day. What did your parents think when you told them that you were going to pursue music as a career?
My dad was not really into it at all early on. I went to Box Hill and studied music and drama, so I changed schools for year 11 and 12. And then Dad's like, you should get a trade behind you, and I always loved electrical stuff. I did it for a work experience when I was young. He said, and Dad's like, if music doesn't work out, you always have a trade behind you. I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. So the following year, I did a pre-apprenticeship, got a job, and then I found out I was colorblind, and I got sacked within the space of the 2 weeks of going to TAFE, getting a job. Like,
shout out to Box Hill TAFE.
Who didn't
test you for being colorblind right at the start.
Yeah, yeah. So that was pretty heartbreaking. And then I didn't really know what to do. So my cousin gave me a job working in a factory, and I was scanning forms, and that was pretty awkward. They had the music on all the time, so I was singing in the factory. That was cool. I did a bunch of different jobs as well, like mowing the old petrol station sites where there's no petrol stations anymore. the lawns need to be mowed. I did them for a while. I put up the signs in the airport. You know, the big, massive ones where you're getting your bags. There's always a big, advertising signs. I would replace them. Bit of labouring with some mates who are actual tradies at that stage. Yeah, I think they were just happy for me to be happy because I was singing 3-4 nights a week.
Mm.
And then
that doesn't just pay your bills though, so you needed to have something else.
And I was working during the week in a factory, and I think I was just saving. I was literally cruising, dare I say, dancing. I was dancing through life. I wasn't really trying anything new other than learning a few new songs every week.
Did you have any idols? Like, who were your idols growing up?
Fonzie. Surely. Like, he's just the greatest. What a performer. He was always just funny when he was on TV, when he was doing, he would do like little skits and stuff. He's charming and he could sing. Just, he could really, really hold a stage. He was one of my favourites growing up.
Did you turn up every week with John Farnham on Idol and say, I've got another Fonzie song I want to sing?
I could never sing John Farnham's song.
Couldn't you?
Nah.
No. Come on.
No, who can? Who? You?
Guy Sebastian?
Even Guy would say, nah, I'm leaving that one.
Oh. I used to babysit his kids.
Oh, really?
When I was younger. Yeah.
Little Rob?
No, it was James, actually.
Okay.
Rob was only a few years younger than me.
Mm.
But I remember John came around with Jill, said, can you look after James? He's got a little frog, a pet frog. It was a really hot day. And when they came back to pick him up, I'd accidentally left the frog outside and the sun had dried the frog. And it was just... So he left screaming, I never babysat the Farnhams again.
It was a real frog. You killed this pet frog.
Dead.
That's the worst babysitter ever.
I was never asked to come back.
You don't have pets now, do you?
No, well, I have a dog, but...
Where is it?
I'm completely...
It's in the sun. It's in the car, windows up.
It's in the car at Crown Casino. Mm. Not a good story. So then how did you hear about Australian Idol?
So singing at the pubs and... A friend of mine from my high school had seen that it was big in America. I think the internet was just around, was just starting up.
Can you make the sound of what it sounds like when you connect to the internet? And that's just when you're looking up porn.
Yeah. Waiting for those photos to load. Photos, not videos.
Yeah, JPEGs or whatever they're called. Anyway, so you heard about it through the internet?
Through a friend.
Oh, through a friend, yeah.
And she said, you should audition for the show. And I said, sure. I mean... I'm literally not doing anything other than singing and working in a factory.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen? So I went there on the Saturday morning and they told me to come back the next day. They'd already had enough applicants for the day. So then I went, did two gigs that night. One was at the Anglers Tavern and the next one was at Breakers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Breakers in Preston. And then had some Maccas, I think, and then lined up at about, got to Maccas, got to the audition about 6 a.m., lined up till about 10:30, 11, I think it was. And they called my number and I walked in and sang the opposite of what I've been singing over the weekend. I sang a Westlife song thinking it's a pop show. So I sang Westlife, Swear It Again.
Can you give us a line from that?
I'm never going to say goodbye, because I never want to see you cry. I still want you, my love would remain. And I swear it all over again, all over again.
I don't know whether or not it's as good as for the people at home, but I think you sound better than Westlife here in the flesh.
Thanks, mate.
I have to say that, though. But kudos to you for being able to bust that song out.
Yeah.
So you get onto the show and you've pretty much got no idea because Australian Idol was in their infancy. So Australia's your first experience of this program.
Mm.
And you're obviously doing quite well. Did you connect to the judges quite well?
No, they kept to themselves. I think that was part of the show in the beginning. They didn't really want to have any chat with them or they were friendly, but yeah, it was because the comments that they were making were, especially Dicko.
Controversial for the time.
Controversial. But after the show was done, we did a tour with Dicko and Dicko is camp. Like he is just a ham and super lovely. And he's very direct with his opinions. And I think they're all bang on. Throughout the series. I don't think they were as controversial as what the media brought them up to be. I think he was pretty spot on and said whatever everyone else was thinking. We forged a really good friendship on the tour that we did. So we toured the country, like, how's that? From pub singing to 100, 200 people to singing at Rod Laver, sold out two nights here in Melbourne and singing all the arenas around the country within 6 months is pretty ridiculous. And Dicko, Chan and Guy and I, we had a great tour. We had a real good party tour. Met a lot of great people, like in the industry, like rock and roll, like Rock Dogs. And I've always just been a big fan of Dicko. Dicko was the reason I got the record deal. He really pushed that for me with BMG. And yeah, we've just been mates ever since. I mean, I follow his career and we're constantly in contact. When I say constantly, at least, you know, we have those regular catch-up chats on the phone every year. So, which is good. I like that.
A lot of people finish these reality shows and there's a competitive nature. And I don't think competitiveness is really in your nature, really. Did you find that some of the other people on those shows, on that particular show, was very competitive coming off the program?
Not really. I think because we were the first ones, no one had really any idea. I think maybe there was one girl who had been signed before. She was in a band called Swoop. Rebecca LaVorne, which is a great song. Apple eyes getting so stars forever. So she had some idea of how the record industry worked, and she was, I suppose, more competitive because she just knew more. But I wouldn't say anyone was really that competitive. Guy had been around for years with Planet Shakers and toured the world singing sort of gospel songs and big religious pop songs. So he sort of had an idea as well. Shan was just a country boy who'd just been, similar to me, had just been doing gigs for all his life. But I wouldn't say anyone was really competitive. I don't think that came until the following year. I mean, maybe you found that when with Big Brother, like you were pretty early on and like there was, I don't know, more competitiveness that came after.
So after this experience of being on Idol, obviously Australia knows who you are. Mm. And quite often you talk about the fact that the public had an idea of who you were, you know, before you really had a sense of who you were.
Yeah.
What is the perception of the public of Millsy in 2003?
Party boy, bit of a larrikin, lout, doesn't take himself too seriously, doesn't take anything seriously, and can sing okay. Like, I think that's, dare I say, ladies' man, but that's the public perception, not me.
But you got ladies' man directly because of that whole Paris Hilton scandal.
Yeah.
Which then people, you know, it became a footnote for you as well.
Yeah, you're like, I'm just someone who met someone.
I'm a guy from Glenway who went on like a couple of dates with someone who was mildly famous. Like her parents own hotels, I think, at the time.
She doesn't do anything.
Why did that resonate so much with the public, though? Like, why do you think there was so much interest in that story?
I don't know. I still to this day don't understand it. Is it because she's a hotel heiress? Is it because I'm a nobody?
Maybe it's the rags to riches story, like that the Prince and I type thing, where people thought you were going to get whisked away like a princess and live in one of those hotels.
That's not what I wanted. I was 21, single, like a couple of weeks. That's enough. See ya. Thanks for a good time.
Did you ever speak to her again?
Yeah, we caught up the following year. She came back, which is what's weird. This is the weirdest thing.
Okay.
So I don't understand why it always gets brought up.
We're talking about it again.
Yeah, and then I get told, I went down the route for a while of I don't want to talk about it, like to say like blanketing in interviews, and then still bring it up. So I'm like, all right, I'll just say, yeah, it happened. Let's just move on.
Mm.
And then she comes out here last year and says, I don't remember him. I'm like, just if you say yes, guys. It happened. Can we move on? Then it's all done. It is all done. It's done forever. Like, that's it. You say it. I've said it. Once you take ownership of it, it loses its power. But she stuffed it forever.
You'd have to wonder why. Do you know, though?
She's annoyed. Like, I spoke to a publicist, and she's annoyed that people keep bringing it up. Like, as am I. I'm not the person that brings it up.
But what happened the year later when she came back? Did you just go and hang out once and realize there was no...
She was only here for a week or so.
Okay.
So we just caught up that time she was here. We did what young people do.
It's exactly what they would do. Yeah. I mean, if you take away the titles of these people, I think sometimes what you don't realize is, especially with at the time you were being a reality star, but people don't think of you as a real person. They don't realize that what you're actually doing, no matter who it is with, that you are just, you know, Rob Mills. And at the time you were
trying to find himself,
you know, 20, 21,
yep,
doing exactly what everyone else is doing.
Yep.
And that people probably needed to leave you alone. When did the bubble of Idol burst from being this megastar in Australia, a household name, like you still are now, but there's obviously a bubble that bursts coming off the back of that?
Oh, look, to be honest, I don't think I was ever a household name. It was a very popular show, but I didn't finish first or second. I finished fifth. I did a record deal. I did a tour, a great tour from Cairns down to Melbourne. Did some awesome gigs. Had some moderate success with the singles. The first single went to number 6 on the charts.
I bought your album.
Thank you. The album was great. It was really... I actually got to spend time. I was like... In that first year, Guy and Shannon put out an album within a month or 2 months. I got 6 months or so to... Or it was almost a year before the album came out, which was great. I had time to write some songs. So I have 7 co-written tracks on that album. And yeah, got to write with some amazing writers and producers. And I had the best time. We did a tour and then... The record company dropped me soon after. Like, it was like, oh, you know, it only sold 30,000 copies of the album. I was like, it's a lot for someone who's just starting out. Like,
yeah.
Isn't it?
What did they expect, do you think?
Platinum, double platinum, like Guy and Shannon, maybe. I don't know. Like, and I was just kind of like, oh. And also, I remember in one of the first meetings, they're like, we've got this idea for you. We want you to do a cover of Aerosmith's Love in an Elevator. I went, no. No one covers Aerosmith. That's Aerosmith.
They're already doing it.
That's not that old, that song. Like, yeah. This is the best thing you can come up with? I think what I thought at the time, record companies were this factory that had great ideas and they put you with these people and that they created stuff for you.
Mm.
They don't. And nor do they ever. I think it's up to the individual to find their own creativity. And that is something that's stuck with me forever, that you have to create your own destiny. There is no one else that's going to do it for you the way that you want to do it. You have to create it yourself.
Is that the advice that you give to... Because, I mean, obviously, in this country, we have, like, 2 big music shows that get made, reality shows,
yep.
Like The Voice, X Factor, whatever they happen to be. What advice do you give those
to the
those
guys coming off it? To the young... I met a girl who went on The Voice. Her name's Ellen Reed, and she is amazing. My advice for her is always just keep creating new stuff. If you didn't get picked up in the record deal, you have to keep making your music that you want to make. And just... We're in a very lucky time of our lives, technological life, that you can... post a video, you can record onto your phone, you can mix it and master it on your iPhone or on your computer with a program that's going to cost you a couple hundred dollars. Like, it's ridiculous. This sort of technology wasn't around
10
years ago. Or,
well, you think of Troy Sivan.
Yeah, he's just... And what's he doing? He's just creating some stuff.
He's just putting out content. I think, you know, and he was doing it very young. I think he did... he covered a cover, which was Anthony Kalia's The Prayer,
mm-hmm.
and he just put that on YouTube. And then it resonated.
Yeah.
So I think if people are out there, they need to create their own content.
100%.
And they're not necessarily needing to wait for what I think in Australia, I think a lot of people up and coming think that they're not anybody if they're not on a show, or they're not anyone if they're not being put in the Woman's Day.
Yeah.
That's all the stuff that no one should care about. In actual fact, if you're just at home creating original content and being true to yourself.
That's it.
And creating an authentic storyline, then maybe then people pick it up.
That's it. Just be authentic. You can't go wrong with being honest and authentic. That is the only way, I think, to even get by in this world. It's not to become famous or to sell whatever you want to sell. If it's selling yourself, sure, I don't like that stuff. But if that's what you want to do, go for it. But as long as it's authentic, as long as it's...
then people resonate.
Correct. As long as it's truly you.
And then... From that period, there was a little bit of time where obviously you were, you know, working on your music and thinking about what you were going to do next.
So I took an overseas trip and saw some shows on the West End.
Right.
I remember seeing Wicked preview week. So Adina, Helen Delimore, Adam Garcia.
Wow.
I was like, there's a few Aussies that are in this. And I'd heard the soundtrack when I was doing Grease the Arena Spectacular in Melbourne. In Australia, we did a big arena tour. Got to work with Farnsey. Magda. And
Nat Bass.
And Nat Bass, Greg. Yeah, it was great. And then I saw Wicked and I went, oh, I could do that. I mean, sure, I can't dance as well as Adam. He's very good. But I could learn. I mean, I could learn those steps. Sure. I'm all right on the D floor. So, and then I saw Avenue Q. I saw We Will Rock You. I saw a bunch of new kind of new age musicals because I thought musicals were... Oh, what a beautiful morning.
Yeah.
Which is not my voice.
When
at
you
all.
Think of, well, I just worked that out. Musicals then had a perception of what they were. Haven't they kind of had a bit of a resurge where now you go, oh, musicals are kind of cool and I'm going to go along and see them. And they're not Oklahoma. Not that Oklahoma's bad.
No.
But it's not...
I'm glad you worked out what that was, though. That was good. From my thing. But yeah, they are. I think they're the best form of storytelling that there is. Like, when you think of it, they combine all of the art forms. Like, acting, obviously. You need a good script.
Mm.
Singing, you need a good voice. But you've got music. Music is the one thing that tells the story. That actually describes the emotion. Like, it takes you from dialogue and it adds this underscore. And then if you can't say the thing that you want to say to someone, right? And then it's just not getting through to you, right? It's just not getting through to them if they're not getting it. What do? You sing it. You sing that emotion to, you sing that point of view. And then if that's not working, you stop singing and you say it. And that's not working, maybe you'll dance it. Then you dance it to this person. It's all about trying to convey your message to the other person. And you put all those art forms together. I think that's what makes a great musical the best form of storytelling that there is, because all your senses are covered.
What's your favourite musical you've been a part of? Is that Wicked?
For sure. For several reasons, but mainly the female empowerment. The fact that it was one of the first shows that we got to see on stage and as an audience and on a global scale, that the woman doesn't need a prince to save the day. It's the friendship between two girls, the two leading ladies. It's the friendship that saves them both, that they both work out who it is that they love and that they love themselves. And even to be different is to be okay with being different, and that you can still defy gravity by just choosing to be who you are. I just think it's amazing. Without Wicked, there is no Frozen. Without Frozen, there is young girls and young boys growing up thinking that there still needs to be a prince that saves the day.
Has there ever been a show that you've gone and done that you've thought this hasn't worked out the way you wanted it to?
Grease is probably the hardest one for me that I did. I played Danny Zuko. I don't know, it's definitely set in a time.
Mm.
But that whole story of, don't know if you can tell I'm a feminist, that a woman at the end goes, this guy has been treating this girl terribly the whole time, and then she changes for him.
Mm.
Like, it's... That's... What? What message is that for children?
She put on some nice pants,
She dresses...
She was hot.
She was hot, and he's like, oh, great.
She smoked a cigarette. Oh.
You know what? I like this girl now. Like, it's a dreadful message for children.
I love the fact that you can see that, and I think that more people... should look at musicals that same way, or more people should look at the work that they're doing and look at the content that's being put out for younger people, for anyone really.
Yeah,
make sure that the stereotypes we're talking about is being updated. It is what's current.
Yeah.
And not talking about relationships that can be very misogynistic in a way.
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of musicals that are now... I watched South Pacific a few years ago and went, that guy's having sex with a 16-year-old? That's weird. Like, is this not weird to anyone else? What? This is weird, guys. She's 16. Like, that's weird. Anyway.
I think
it needs to be updated. Like, and it is. As I said, shows like Avenue Q, you look at all the shows that are coming out now. Beautiful is a great musical. But, I mean, the stuff that's being new and created new, things like Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, which is tackling mental issues. And so the shows are getting made. They're just maybe not coming here just yet, but they're on their way. They're on their way.
They're coming. And with people like you that will have to champion them, I think that's another thing for you, is that you're quite active in supporting this stuff coming through.
I think
you have to be. I mean, you have to live and breathe what it is that you do, so I guess that's what you're doing. But then is it a bit of a, to get onto Dancing with the Stars, seeing as that you've been doing musical theatre, did you expect to be like an amazing dancer?
No, I'd only been doing Wicked for maybe 3 or 4 months when that came up. And I was like, well, so I'd have to do Wicked at night time, learn how to dance during the day, and take Sundays off to film Dancing with the Stars. And the producers were like, that's okay, you can do it. But I was like, that's a lot. That's a lot of dancing to learn.
Mm.
Sure. So I did it and I got kicked off second. I thought I did really well. Helen told me that I was the best dancer on the show, and it was political. So, and I believe Helen. Todd gave me dreadful scores, and I just don't think I was as popular in the media, which is fine as well. I just enjoyed being a part of it.
And then you went into, how many years after that was it that you did Celebrity Apprentice?
Oh, a few years after. I think I'd already done Legally Blonde.
Oh, yeah. I saw Legally Blonde. I thought you were amazing in that.
Thank you.
It was good. But I liked that show as well.
It's a great show. That's another great show. They took a film and then turned into a musical, but also a musical that just takes the piss out of itself a bit. It's unapologetically musical.
Mm.
That was a very clever script, the way that they adapted the film. Because the film's got a great heart about it as well. And also about a woman getting what she deserves. But
we're saying the common theme here.
But also working really hard for it. Not resting on her laurels, but having to work really, really hard to get that thing that she wanted.
And then you went on to this.
The Celebrity Apprentice is that show. I did it to raise money for charity.
Mm-hmm.
The money, like, you get paid to go on Celebrity is not a lot. But I had a gap in my calendar. I was like, oh, I've just finished. Yeah, I think I just finished up with Legally Blonde and
thought, why not?
We're going to do something. So sure, I'll do this. But they don't feed you. They get you up ridiculous hours. And I was living at home in Sydney, and they're like, oh, do you want to stay at the hotel here? I was like, nah. I kind of like my own bed. I want to get away from
that environment.
From everyone. Because everyone, I imagine, would drink every night after the shoot, and they'd sit around. I'm like, nah.
That's awkward.
I'm not that kind of person. I'd rather go home to my own bed and sleep, to be honest. It's hard because they want, you know, you have to keep your own spirits up. Steph and I became good friends out of that.
Yeah, people rumoured that you were together during the time.
Oh, I've got two bedrooms in my place in Sydney. She stayed the night a few times in the spare room. And they're like, oh, she's dirty. You're like, no, she's a baby. She's a small child. Like,
I think she was going through a separation at the time. Yeah. Like, she was not having the best time anyway.
No, she wasn't. I was just being a friend. Just trying to be a friend.
The media wants that story, though.
I want that story.
And I guess at the same time, doing a reality TV show like Celebrity Apprentice, they like the headlines as well. Like, it's a friend of mine said they leaked a lot of stories, you know, where was coming from, you know. So
people
knew stuff, and it was all about promoting the show. But I think with you as well, you come across quite raw at times, which I think also connects.
Because I grew up in the suburbs, probably.
Could be that you grew up in the suburbs, but I think you still come across not... Like, I think when we talk back to Millsy from Australian Idol, I think there's a bit of a larrikin vibe that's there. But then I think you've been sort of shaken around a lot, you know, throughout the media.
Yeah.
And so there's a fragility that's there.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to grow up in front of the media, I suppose, a little bit. But that's just is. Like, I never really question it. I just go, yep, that's just part of my life. And the judgment stuff that comes with that, I've always had to just acknowledge it and put it aside, I suppose.
Cop it on the chin, I guess.
Yeah, and just, okay. But when you're younger, it's harder. I imagine it'd be a lot harder these days for children with social media and the bully. Because you get caught up in your phone and your computer and if you read everything, oh, that would kill your soul.
I can't even imagine. I couldn't. I don't think I'd have the confidence, really, to do what a lot of kids are doing these days following social media. What about for you creating relationships? I think, was that hard for you over time to create relationships?
A loving relationship, like a romantic relationship? I met someone during Wicked who was from New Zealand, who's a dancer and now an incredibly successful director and choreographer and... Yeah, she's working on lots of the big projects at the moment. Just worked on Dream Lover and Muriel's Wedding and still super, super, super proud of it. We're not together anymore, but I, like, love her. But, yeah, she was someone it was great to have not from Australia, maybe, that helped, or someone that taught me a lot about empathy, which I didn't know about, and caring about other people instead of yourself, and that there is another... Yeah, there's a lot more people out there that are harder, that have it harder than me. So yeah, I learn a lot from that relationship. We all learn things about ourselves from different partners, I think, in relationships that we have.
Well, you definitely walk away. I mean, none of the relationships I had. I mean, I'm in a relationship now for 8 years going on, and
that's marriage. That's marriage material, mate.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that's a story. That's a different story altogether. But I think all the relationships I had beforehand all taught me very different things. Mm-hmm. And whilst I didn't stay with them, I still look at those relationships as being quite beautiful. I mean, I'd never go back to them.
No, absolutely not, 100%.
And they didn't work for that reason.
Exactly. We're better off just being friends.
But was it hard, though, as then not just relationships as in loving relationships, but creating genuine friendships as well? I mean, paralleling the fact that you're working in the media, how do you know when you're meeting people that they are genuine? They want to be your genuine friend? Do you have a barometer that goes off and you're like, this person's crazy?
No, I'm pretty open with everyone. So, and also, I'm pretty good at first impressions, but I'm not great at following up, to be honest. But I remember when I've met someone that I've had a really good connection with, it's hard as an adult to make friends. I've even thought about... Have you thought about making an app? I'm sure that someone's already done this before. But instead of like...
Instead of looking for a relationship, looking for genuine friendship?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, it goes through your algorithms of all your social media and stuff and works out what you're actually having in common with the other, with the next person. But anyway, I met a few years ago Trisha Now Squires and her friends. And I just had a great day on the Yarra. We had a few beers. And I went, it was just during Moomba. Trish was the queen of Moomba that year. And I was in a bathtub race with her and I tipped her out into the Yarra because I'd already fallen out of my bathtub, not knowing that Trisha had not been in the water since the tsunami of Boxing Day a few years beforehand, where she lost her husband at the time. So I'd completely forgotten that bit. And I think she was horrified at the time, but then realized, oh, this guy just treats me like a normal person. And therefore, I just treated her like... She just treated me like a normal person. And we hit it off. We hit it off that afternoon, had a few beers. I met her friends and fell in love with these great, like-minded, empowering, lovely humans. I'm still friends with today. And I remember saying to them, will you be my friends? like asking them. I think I'd had a few beers. But and I've maintained those relationships because they are just genuinely good human beings who want nothing but the world to be a better place. They like to work hard and they like to party hard. They're my kind of people.
Yeah, I think I went to a house party that you were at as well. And I think all of you guys were basically demolishing, I think, this house
along the
Esplanade.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big house party.
That was Hamish's house.
And I was like, whose house is this?
That was Hamish's house. Yeah, that was Hamish Blake's house, I think, at the time. But
he's a part of that friendship circle as well. And I have to say, from sort of touching in and out of that friendship circle for a long time, they are very genuine people and their philosophy on life is about being good to other people.
Yeah.
And genuinely grabbing life and giving it a good shake.
Yeah, well, not just giving it a shake, but surround yourself with like-minded, wonderful humans. And if there's a holiday, take the holiday. If it means spending a bit more money and having a great experience, then do that as well. That's what I like about them. You can't put a price on experiences.
I think. You're always all in your underpants and it always ends up on Facebook.
There's that as well.
And I just am always like, how are they all in their underpants again on a yacht?
That's PK.
I'm like, is this a proof? I don't know if I could be friends with these people. My body isn't good enough to go and hang out with them. Now, it would be remiss of me to not quickly talk about You Can't Ask That, which has been on television this week.
Yes.
And the headlines have been surrounded with you talking about some of the darker times coming out of reality television.
Yeah.
What period was that? Like, the headlines were that, you know, there was a very dark day for you where you were at a hotel or staying somewhere where you even contemplated ending your life. At what point of your career was all of that happening?
This happened a week after I finished Idol. Yeah, I was up at the Gold Coast with Levi, who's no longer with us, sadly. We were taken around Channel 10 the whole day. I had one of the greatest days. As a boy who grew up loving motorsport, I was in the pits. I was like, I was getting the royal treatment. And then that night, it's indie weekend, and everyone is drunk. And I'm used to being in pubs and people drinking because I'm singing on stage, and that's fine. But when you're in amongst it, on Cavill Avenue, and I was getting grabbed and choked and like my hair pulled and I want a photo. I'll get over here. These girls are yelling at me. Like I felt like like I was being mobbed, and I had a massive panic attack and I just jumped into someone's car and I said to the guy, can you just drive? Please just drive anywhere. And he drove me back to my hotel. This guy was just like, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm not okay. And he's like, are you Millsy? I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. Like, he could tell that I was distraught. And I remember going up to my hotel room pretty much straight away, and the balcony door was open. And I ran up to that balcony. I just looked over and, I just quickly slammed the door and said, don't do that. Like, but the thought was, this is it. Like, this is, you could do it now. You could just, you could jump and then you wouldn't have to feel this way ever again.
Is there a duty of care that's missing from these reality TV stars? Don't you think there should be like a duty of care?
I did a Young Talent Time. I was hosting the new Young Talent Time a few years ago. We had these kids who were had been taken out of... Some had moved home. Their parents had moved them to Sydney. They'd put them in new schools for the year. The show ran for 16 weeks or something like that. And at the end of it... I'll touch on this quickly. They made the kids sing a sad song and shoot a glitter cannon at them after the song. It was horrible. But have a look at the footage. It's on there. I'm like, you could do an upbeat song and shoot a glitter cannon, or you do a down, like a sad song and then no glitter cannon.
I really should not laugh at that, but it's kind of comical.
It's ridiculous. And I said, we're going to do some, you're going to do some psychology with the kids, right, after. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, you need to give them some counselling about this, about the journey they've been on. And they're like, we don't, I'm like, no, you have to. You actually have to do that. Like, it's imperative for these children. So, got a friend of mine who'd been through Reach. He's a great facilitator. And he came and did a session with the kids. We talked about the hero's journey, which is, it's a very, you know, the hero's journey, the proverb. Yeah. So, where, yeah, these kids have learnt and done something incredible, like slaying a dragon, and then having to come back to Earth and come back to the real world.
It's empowering to go through that. And you think about some of the athletes that don't get that conversation had to them, or
they're big on it now. Like,
it's starting to change.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I think Jeff Cannett's been, who's the Hawthorn Football Club president, he's been a big supporter of, he's on the board of Beyond Blue. So a big supporter of mental health and having to make those right choices and have those right things put in place at every football club, which is so, so important.
Absolutely.
But also for the kids.
What was was there any backlash this week, you know, after being on You Can Ask That, with people saying anything to you on social media?
No, I've been getting great feedback, like just thanks for your honesty and thanks for, and you've had a great career and appreciate the fact that you're a hard worker and kept going. Charlie Pickering wrote me a really lovely message and said it takes a bit to stick around in this stupid business, and you've proved a lot of people wrong, and yeah. So I was chuffed. I got a really lovely message because he's also one of the gladiators, I think, of entertainment. It continues to keep creating content and making great success.
Had you already been watching You Can't Ask That before you asked?
Yeah, I'd seen a few.
And were you a fan of the show?
Yeah, of course. Well, I was on John Fain's program yesterday, and we talked about, I said, it's one of the most important shows to in Australia right now. It's the water cooler chat that we used to have. We used to have those kind of chats, but now we don't. We're just like, oh, let's see that funny video that that was on Instagram. Is it that cat video again? No, what about having a conversation about real issues and about real topics? Or maybe having those conversations about topics that you didn't think that you could.
Mm.
So that's what's been most powerful, and I think that's why the boys are winning awards and why it's being picked up all around the world, this show. Because it's creating conversation, and that's what we are severely lacking in today's modern society.
Well, obviously, all the topics that are being picked. I mean, apart from the reality TV.
I mean, ours is like...
Apart from the reality TV.
I said this to John. I'm like, that's a bit wishy-washy, like, when it comes to...
The topics, right.
But I'm happy to have a chat, happy to be a part of it. But the week before, the first episode, if you're listening and you're intrigued, you're interested, the first episode that went to air
was
Survivors of Sexual Abuse. And it is harrowing and... some of the responses, we had a few callers in yesterday, and I was welling up in the studio listening to these callers again. It's beautifully put together and heartbreaking, and yeah, you should definitely watch that and watch the rest of this series. It's fantastic. The boys have done a great job, and also you'll notice why it's also so good. The answers are great. The questions that they ask are fantastic, but it's the music.
The music does work, but also
very good with the music.
I think that the editing of when they choose to do your framing, I think really accentuates some of the story. I don't know how or who sat there and cut that show together after interviewing, you know, eight people and then blending the stories together for each episode, but that would be an enormous amount of work. And then the music does give you a lot of empathy. Just because we are on Joy, I think it's important to talk about LGBTI themes.
There should be a gay bachelor. Is that what you're going to say?
No, because do you want to host that show?
Bloody hell, I'd host it for sure.
How good would LGBTI Bachelor be, you know, where it's like not, yeah.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be so good. What do you label yourself as when it comes to sexuality? Because, like, how do you deal with that when people ask you that question?
I just like people.
So you're like, I'm interested. Because people have often asked you about your sexuality. What do you usually answer when that question comes to you?
I've always said I've been with both. So I just, yeah. But I've always...
But do you feel uncomfortable labelling then yourself as bisexual?
I suppose, yeah. Maybe I do. I just... I'll never say that I'm straight. Like...
Maybe you don't like labels.
Yeah, I just don't like... I don't like labels. I love people. I think that's always how I've... Predominantly, my relationships have been with...
With women.
Yeah.
What's the longest relationship you've had with a man then?
Oh, just one night.
Like just a passion.
Just a fling. Yeah. Just a party passion that dance floor. Like, see how far this goes.
Well, I guess that sort of moves you with the spectrum. So there's a spectrum of down here is very gay, which is basically me.
Yeah.
And then there's very, you know, blokey, which I guess is Arnold Schwarzenegger. opposite of me. Oh, maybe.
Yeah, no, he's...
So do you think that there's basically...
A spectrum. Oh, 100% there's a spectrum. Like... Look at all the different personality types. There's a spectrum.
I've got a girlfriend of mine. She is in a same-sex relationship, but she doesn't identify herself as being a lesbian.
I've got a lot of girlfriends like that.
And she's like, you know, been in a relationship for 10 years with a woman. And so she was like, I guess I am bisexual. And bisexuality isn't being highlighted probably enough. But I would say she seems more bisexual than you, being that you just seemed a bit more liberal with the party pashes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's... I don't want to give anyone any high hopes, because I reckon there's people out there that are listening and they're just going, Milsey's bisexual?
I'm
going
to forget Rob Milsey. Can I say that?
They're going to be queuing up. They're like, apparently we
just
can
buy
see...
Just buy me a drink, guys.
Just buy him one drink and see how it goes.
I had a great time at Mardi Gras. Can I say, I had a great time at Mardi Gras this year. I got a ticket through a friend of mine and we went and saw Cher. But... And I'm... Like, I'm in musical theatre. I'm surrounded by guys in G-strings all the time. Like, this is, like...
Yeah.
There's a lot of gay in my world. Like, and I love it. My world is so much better than that I've been in musical theatre. Like, I'm more progressive. Like, I'm a much more rounded and awesome human, I think. Mm-hmm. Because of musical theatre, right? But the Mardi Gras in that big hall, mate, that is the gayest thing I've ever... Like, it's the hottest, sweatiest mess. Have you been?
I was there at show.
Oh! It was so hot in there. It was hot, but everyone, so lovely. There's no pushing in. It's the best. I had a very lovely, awesome gay time.
And you had a gay time. I don't want to ask, did you have a party patch that night with someone?
No, I didn't. Although, I was wearing a leopard print safari suit, right? So, I'm wearing no top.
I think that's waiting at the party patch.
Right? I looked amazing. Check my Instagram. And the taxi driver... And I don't know if this happens a lot. As I got to pulled up the hotel, I said, how much? He goes, how much do you want to pay? And I said, like, nothing. Like, I would like to, like, if it's free, I'll take a free ride. Well, there are ways that we can arrange that. And I went,
what?
Like, what ways? Like, what? And he's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's $30 or something, whatever it was. I went, hang on a second. Were you
saying what?
And then I told a few people, this happens a lot. Do you know this happens a lot?
I mustn't be very attractive. It's never happened to me.
it's the first time it's ever happened. Apparently happens to women a lot.
Oh,
and
the hairy checkbook. I've only heard about it in movies.
There you go. Happened to me on Mardi Gras night. But I was, as I said, wearing a leopard print safari suit.
And Milsey, I'm just going to say this to you right now.
I said
now.
No. Just so weird.
No, I wasn't going to ask that. I was just going to say.
And I do love a free ride. I love anything free.
I was just going to say that you're an attractive guy, so I'm assuming you're getting that more than maybe other people.
You're an attractive guy.
I've never been asked for the hand shandy or whatever they call it. You can go home for free if you... anyway, we're going off on a tangent here. And what's next for Rob Mills?
You can see me in Puffs, which is on at the moment. We've been extended to the 12th of August. If you liked a certain boy wizard who went to a certain school of magic and magic, wink, wink.
Yeah.
I think we know the kid with the scar and the glasses. Come and see the show. You will laugh your ass off. It is hilarious. It's on 8 shows a week. And I am going back into Neighbours very soon. Finn Kelly is back for all
You are
those.
Not going back. Do you know what my mum said to me after she watched You Can't Ask That?
Yeah.
Did you meet that guy? And I was like, no, actually. I said, but I've met Rob a few times. Yeah. She said, he's a bastard. And I said to her, I was like, Mum, that's not what he's like. And then she watched the show and she said, he's actually really lovely. I'm like, Mum, please.
He's acting.
And then she was like, he can't come back from what he's done now. I said, no, Mum, think about Paul Robinson.
Yeah.
But you play Flynn or Finn. Finn. You play Finn.
Yeah.
Can he come back from whatever nastiness my mum's talking about?
We'll see.
So you're going to come back as a nasty pasty?
We'll see.
Look, if Nat Bass can come back as Izzy Hoyland after all the trouble she caused,
Yeah, mate.
Then maybe you can come back.
It's great. I love it. I love working on Neighbours.
When are you back on Neighbours?
We'll start filming soon. Yeah.
Okay. Tim Robards is going to be on there as well. Is that how to say the Bachelor's name? Yeah, they just announced it today.
When does he start filming? He must have started
just
then.
Starting.
He must have started.
He's
then.
The photo of him. You know when you start Neighbours because you've got the same photo.
Always holding it.
Ramsey sign.
Ramsey Street.
That photo's in the paper today.
Oh my God.
Maybe you will get to have a party patch with Tim Robards.
No, he's just too big. Too big and handsome. So intimidating. How do you get that big? It's massive.
He's a good man. Have you got a message for the queer community that is out there listening right now that you would like to give them?
Congrats. Congrats on the same-sex marriage cards. I think it's amazing. And congrats to everyone who fought for it. And just know that social change takes time. I don't know how to... This is a very long journey. This is a long battle for everyone, for you guys, for me to help you. It's still going to take a long time. This is not a rip the band-aid off kind of thing. But keep fighting the fight. Keep supporting Joy. And keep supporting your community as much as you possibly can. But just keep sharing the love. And not just between your own community. Between all communities. That's the way I would do it. Love you guys.
Thank you so much. No, I'm only telling you, thank you. I cannot believe we're still here. Thanks, mate. So much for joining us.
Thanks, mate.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Ben Norris from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations across the community radio network.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.